You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name's Dan Morrison. That's Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing today, Emily?
Good. I have this song stuck in my head. I wish I could play it on the podcast without...
copyright.
Like you can play like 5 seconds or like 3 seconds.
I think you're welcome to sing the song.
I'm not enough.
Because you're probably not going to hit the notes that would get it copyrighted.
Oh my God. I was actually a singer when I was younger. I was in choir in high school and I had a melodious voice, but.
Oh, well, la-di-da. I probably cannot sing for the life of me.
Can't carry a tune, huh?
It's not great.
Well, shout out to Lotto. If you're not listening to Big, Big Energy, she hit us with the remix with Mariah Carey, and it is fantastic. So if you're looking, I mean, it's Tuesday right now. We're recording this Tuesday. If you're looking for a weekend song, this is your calling to download that and listen to it because it's epic.
Well,
they'll put you in the mood.
There you have it. Music podcast for you.
Song recommendation of the week. I should start that. I, as Eric Henry will testify, I am a huge music guru. I used to be a DJ when I was younger. I DJed in the Bay Area and I have a whole series on college DJs because I'm obsessed with like music and what people listen to and how it pumps up the crowd. So I'm going to start doing like a song recommendation of the week.
You do that and I'll,
and I'm going to start asking, like, that's going to be one of the questions I asked Holt Naylor's this week is like, what's your song right now?
You go for it. It's not good to ask me what song I'm listening to.
I wasn't going to.
This is how conversations work. I don't know. My point is I don't listen to new stuff ever.
Okay,
I listen to the same things over and over again. So
That sounds right.
So. I know. Broken record.
But I'm good. I'm great. I'm glad to be recording. We've been itching to do this, but we had to watch the national championship game last night, so we couldn't record.
Yeah,
it was worth it.
A million things coming up that push things back into the off season. So sometimes it's good to wait an extra week to have enough to talk about.
Yes. And we have plenty to talk about.
But you did watch the national championship game.
Of course. People, I don't know if they know this about me because apparently I was getting a lot of texts last night as to why I was tweeting about wanting some of my friends at the game to bring me confetti home. If you don't know, I'm a huge Kansas basketball fan. I don't have a legitimate reason to be one. I didn't go there. I'm not from Kansas, but
you just like FBI investigations.
No, when I was younger, I watched Kirk Heinrich play and it was the most glorious thing I've ever seen. I'll never forget his first game. And ever since then, I loved Kirk Heinrich. So I started watching Kansas and I love Bill Self. And there is no better college basketball environment than Lawrence, than Allen Fieldhouse. So if you haven't been there, I don't want to hear it about Kansas.
Weird way of pronouncing the cage, UMass in the 90s. Come on now. Raging Cage, come on.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just no, immediately no, because Allen Field, I mean, Kansas is the birthplace of basketball, okay? Like,
no, it's not.
Naismith, yes, it is. Naismith, who invented the game, was their head coach. And
yeah, but he invented it in Massachusetts, where he was living at the time.
He didn't coach in Massachusetts.
No.
He brought the game to Kansas.
But he lived in my hometown when he invented basketball for the Springfield YMCA, which is why it matters that we mentioned.
Okay, so YMCA basketball, you can have that, but college basketball, we'll take that again.
We also have the Hall of Fame in Western Mass.
That's also where the resting place of the original rules are in Kansas, in Lawrence Fieldhouse or in Allen Fieldhouse.
Do they include the ladder to go up and get the ball?
I don't.
Because no one's about to cut a hole in the bottom of the bucket. Come on now.
Well, anyways, it was an incredible game. I'm sure you guys all saw it. The biggest comeback win in NCAA championship game history. Kansas, real fast start, which I knew was going to be a problem because they can't play like that. But Remy Martin, my boy from the Pac-12, Arizona State, just doing it live at the end there. I'm so happy for him.
The thing is, North Carolina had nothing to gain by winning that. They already won their national championship when they
ruined they beat Duke. Career. Yeah, that's great.
They ended Kay's career twice with losses to him. At Cameron this year, they beat him to end Kay's Cameron time, and then they beat him in the tournament to end.
But you saw their coach, he wanted it. I mean, he wanted it. I mean, he was like frothing at the mouth. Like,
I know. Of course
you can't have it. Well, you can't have it.
You're starting to remind me, one of my best friends from childhood, he's at Ohio State in a doctoral program. He almost went to the Kansas version of the same program, and he's decided to be a Kansas fan ever since.
Yeah.
As well as, so he roots for Kansas in basketball now and Ohio State in football. And
that's a
pain.
Smart.
It's a pain.
Yeah. But this is the thing is I'm not like a overt crazy Kansas fan. Yeah. And obviously with my profession, I can't be much of a fan of anything.
Oh, but disagree. I disagree.
Well, okay. I will say that being a female in the sports industry, it is better to not show your fandom. Guys, a lot of times can get away with it. Girls cannot. So
I think it's tricky to do, like in all it honesty. Is tough. Because like if you're doing pure journalism, you really do need to be unbiased because those biases show up. I think that if you're doing more opinion, op-ed kind of like article-y things for the most part, which I tend to do a little bit more on that side than pure journalism, going
I dabble.
I dip my toes in the water. I think it's easier to just be like, this is my personality, and you're reading the personality behind what I'm saying.
I like it. Your articles are always very interesting because they're different and the way, and I like that, you know, if it's something you haven't seen before and everybody go read Dan's articles.
I know. All right, that's what I'm saying. New one went up today.
It did. I retweeted it. Definitely go check that out. We're in the middle of pro days, but we're almost to the NFL draft. Like, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks away. We have to record. I think next week we're recording.
It's like 3 weeks away. Don't say that because I'm set to go to Vegas and it's coming up too quick.
But we have to record the Underdog Dynasty like massive podcast with Eric and Joe at some point. I think that's next week. So
shoot on you.
Gotta pay attention to my calendar.
Just text me.
Hopefully they don't listen to this and know that neither of us have any idea when that
is. I think they always listen. Apparently, I don't know if you heard the last episode, but they had Hunter on, or the one before that. And all of a sudden I'm getting these tweets and it's like, oh, Emily, you're immediately brought up in this podcast. And I was like, oh, great. Like, this is going to be some stories, but it was good.
No, they do a good job over at the
show. I was scared.
But like, still.
I've been out with Hunter. We like went out to the bars in Indy. And so I was like, oh no.
Oh, I was going to say Charlotte, but whatever.
Well, no, we did. Well, we didn't get to go out in Charlotte because I covered the game with him. We did get to do a little video together, which was cool at halftime, but it was too crazy. I was flying out the next day because that was one of my 3 games in 3 days weekends. So I literally was like in to cover it and then out because I think that was a Friday night. I did a Thursday night and then a Friday night and then a Saturday. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, you did that during the fall a bunch where you just would go boom, boom, boom. So you have no time death on like that.
Sometimes. Yeah. It depends on how early they kick, but
that's true.
But I loved hanging out with Hunter. So they were like, listen to the podcast, and I listened to their episode and I try and listen to them as much as I can. But so I'm assuming they listen to us. So they're definitely gonna hear this. But
they're technically our bosses. Not technically, they are our bosses too. They're the editors of the site. So like I think they listen to it to make sure we're not running amok over here.
Yeah. Well, we have more coach audio for you guys this week, but first we're gonna dive into a little bit of pro day talk. Dan managed to make it out to a pro day and 10 points if you can guess which one.
Yeah, it was UCF.
It's UCF.
I'm in Orlando right now. It was the easy pro day to go to. I'm not kidding.
But you also wanted to go to it.
Of course, I'd rather go to the USF pro day and the UCF pro day were the same day. Why would I drive to Tampa for the USF one instead of staying in Orlando for it's just a matter of convenience, matter of everything. But no, it was inside the Nicholson Field House. It was, I'd say, 50% of NFL teams were there, if I had to take an estimation.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit less. There's definitely some CFL teams, because I had to look up what the Winnipeg Blue Bombers hat looks like. That was the one where I was like, Washington didn't change their color scheme, did they? Like, who are you? But no, it was good. There was like eight or so guys working out for UCF. A couple old names came back too, like Greg McRae ran the 40 again. He was running routes too. Mackenzie Milton was throwing the ball there. He threw at Florida State's pro day too. Brandon Johnson, though, the wide receiver, had by far the best day for anyone that UCF has, I'd say. Tested nice. Really well in all the jumping and running. He also very soft hands, catching with his hands, not with his body. Like, you could tell, like, when like they were running routes and doing all those receiver, running back, quarterback drills, he was the one actually getting looked at. Like, Nate Craig Myers was working out too, and he had a couple tough drops for himself, frankly. And you could tell that they're like, the first he dropped this ball like an over the shoulder grab, and at that point mm-hmm. you could kind of hear this like, eh, I guess not about him. And like the whole of scouts just turned and were staring at Johnson for the rest of the time.
That's sad.
It is what it is. You know, you can't drop a ball at your pro day. That's what
I happened. Mean. Yeah, it's no. That's true.
Big Cap Bryant worked out too. The Auburn transfer to UCF. He's massive. Like, it's the first time I've been like eye level with him. He made me like, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'2", 250.
You're 6'2"?
Yeah.
I guess we only ever see each other sitting down, but that I didn't realize you were that tall. Yeah. Okay.
He made me feel like a little boy. Like, he was basically working out in like a pair of boxer shorts and nothing else. Just like these really tight compression shorts, you know?
Is it hot? Was it hot out there?
Oh, they had it like 80 something degrees in the field house.
Really?
Yeah, it was hot. It was hot in the building. It may as well have been outside. Yuck. Yeah, sticky. But no, it was hot. And like when he was like doing his drills, he didn't like running the 40 time. He didn't want to be wearing a shirt or any resistance. So he didn't. And let me tell you what, if I ever felt out of shape before, man, you got some flubber going on here compared to him.
I mean, these guys, this is what they have to be in the best shape of their life. This is a job interview. Yeah. So
Kalia Davis, defensive tackle for UCF, who I think could be a good sleeper pick in the draft. He skipped 2020 due to COVID concerns. And then unfortunately, like halfway through this past season, tore his ACL. He wasn't able to work out on the field because of that ACL tear, but he did put up 30 reps on the bench. So, you know, he's a really good interior defensive lineman. I just don't know where he gets drafted with like 5 games played in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah. But that's why these pro days are so important, I feel like. Exactly.
And what I really like about the pro days compared to the combine too, is the combine, you've got this, there's no energy or flow with the other guys that you're there with, like especially receivers and quarterbacks, like running routes with each other. The timing's off at the combine. Like, a lot of times you'll see guys overthrow the ball, but just because the quarterback didn't know how fast or slow that guy was. Sometimes it's just like that chemistry that you don't have that makes a guy look bad at the combine.
And they all like pump each other up at the school pro days. It's fun. Exactly.
And you get all the guys who are going out there who might end up in the XFL or USFL or CFL.
Ooh, not the USFL. Not plug.
You know what I mean though. Like, it's not just NFL, like for sure NFL guys. It's guys going out for any level of the next level. Cole Schneider, the offensive lineman, said he was thinking about doing cage matches if football doesn't work out. So I thought that was...
I really think that a lot of these guys have a alternate path in the WWE and that kind of stuff because of, like, some of them are showmen. Like, George Kittle, I was following his journey at the WWE Stone Cold Steve Austin thing that happened this past weekend or whatever. And it was... Yeah. It's a nice fusion of football and fighting. So,
I mean, you saw Pat McAfee at WrestleMania, right?
Yeah. And there's a former Kennesaw State fullback that's now a WWE personality.
Parker Boudreau, a former UCF offensive lineman, former Notre Dame offensive lineman too, transferred to UCF from Notre Dame. He's some kind of professional wrestling. I forget what it is exactly. He like looks like baby Brock Lesnar. Have you ever seen him, like a photo of him? He looks like he's all steroids.
I don't think we need any more Brock Lesnar's though.
He looks like he's all steroids, to be honest. But like, he looks I'm going to send you a photo right now. But yeah.
No, please don't do that. Dan always texts me in the middle of our conversation so that I'm like filled in. I'm like, all right, cool. You got to catch up a little bit with my guy, Coach Herb Hand,
Yes.
And you, what did he spend a significant amount of time talking about?
Yeah. So he ended up talking with a couple members of the media for about 20, 25 minutes about
he's
bacon,
awesome.
Just about bacon in different places in like Tulsa, where like where they've got the best bacon and the, and it was just incredible to like have him basically live
in Tulsa.
Yeah. Because he coached at Tulsa for a while.
Oh, I need to tweet at him because I'm going to Tulsa this weekend. So I'm like, where's this bacon?
Yeah, I mean, bacon, barbecue, he kept going west through West Virginia, Texas, Ohio, every place where he's ever coached, basically, all the places that he's about. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Herb Hand was with Gus Malzahn at Tulsa.
Oh, that makes sense.
I'm not 100% certain, but I believe when Malzahn was
I'm sure you're going to Google it right now and find out. But
Yeah, from 2007 to 2009. There it is.
One of the things people don't know about Herb Hand is that he is a big chef, big foodie, but he is an incredible cook. And so something I'm going to do with him, hopefully in up this season is like talk about, you know, the dishes that he makes. And there is rumored to be like big eat out cookouts and stuff at his home. And yeah, big, big foodie. So we're going to have some conversations about that, but I'm excited you got to catch up with him because he's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah. It was good seeing everything there. You know, like I said,
did it feel good to be back in the football environment? Like it must have felt.
It did. I've been thinking I want to go out to more stuff like that, but then I'm immediately like, well, I'm not going to the spring game because I've got family in town. So I'm just like, spring games to me aren't that important. I know we were going to save it for later, but I like they're a fun day out, but I don't think that you learn anything at them.
It's true. You don't, but you get to kind of see these guys in the culmination of their hard work. You know, this is what they're all, this is everything they've ever wanted right there in front of them. They just have to reach out and grab it. And they've worked so hard for it. So I get a little emotional, especially with the guys that I'm, you know, close with, like, for example, today's Tulane's pro day. And like, yeah, I thought about going out there to check in on our guy, Corey Dublin. Cause he's one of my,
you were thinking about trips to NOLA. Let's be real.
I mean,
thinking about Bourbon Street.
I had to stay away. No, I don't go to Bourbon when I go to NOLA. I go to the local places with the Tulane people. So I'm not a big Bourbon. I'm not, if you know me at all, I do not like crowds of people.
You're at Bourbon Street ordering your hand grenades.
I've never, how dare you?
Oh, I've never had a hand grenade. They're ridiculous, but
gross.
Or the shark attack one where they like will blow a whistle in your face and throw napkins at you for it.
I was a bartender for many years and I loathe people that order adioses and, you know, Long Islands, like
when I was at UMass,
when
I was at UMass, I would sometimes work odd jobs in the dish room just to make some cash during the semester of like the dining halls. And there was this old man who also worked, there was mostly students. It'd be like 9 students washing dishes and this one old man, but he would make us pitchers of Long Islands to drink while we were working. So, you know, if you're ever at a UMass dining hall, just know all the people washing dishes are drunk.
That's pleasant. I like that. I like that for them. But yeah, so, you know, a lot of these pro days going on and Tulane's got theirs today, which is funny because I was able to catch up with their head coach, Willie Fritz. As you know, I'm doing this, you know, AAC coaches tour where I'm interviewing them all for a story I'm doing about schedules, which I'm hoping should come up this week or next week, finally. But while I have them on the phone, of course, I'm going to ask them questions about the AAC, which environments they think are tough, like, you know, all those things. And Willie Fritz, as many of you know, especially Tulane fans, very, you know, straightforward kind of guy, not a lot of bells.
He's dry.
I don't want to say dry, not a lot of bells and whistles or pomp and circumstance with him. He's very straightforward. And the funny thing is every time I talk with him, as you guys will hear in a moment in this clip, he always sounds like he's lost his voice all the time. And I actually texted one of the Tulane players that and they died laughing.
Water.
I mean, he's just always yelling, like just he's exuberant out in the field. And so they said he's just, his voice is always gone. So it was no different when I spoke with him the last week after practice one morning. So I asked coach, I said, where is your favorite AAC environment to play in? And here is what Tulane head coach Willie Fritz had to say about that.
Yeah, I think they all have got good environments. And, you know, you just need to go in there and kind of block that stuff out. And, you know, we do a lot of noise during practice, you know, it's just so guys are, you know, familiarize themselves with crowd noise and that's not an issue or a problem. We do that during the season. We don't do much of it during spring ball. But Yeah, I think everybody's got, you know, nice setups in the conference. So he's got to adjust when you go on the road. You just got to adjust. Usually the weather has a little bit more impact than the actual field and stadium.
Yeah, it's almost a little political from Fritz the way he answers that, isn't it? Where he's not trying to be like, oh, the Liberty Bowl, I can't go in there, and it's not TDECU. It's you know, we all have our advantages. Hard to say that. And like, to an extent, he's right. There's something that makes every stadium unique, blah, 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 except for the two that play in NFL stadiums.
Oh, my God.
I'm thinking about Temple first and foremost. They're not even thinking about USF.
I know. I immediately knew that you were talking about Temple.
Well, yeah. Wasn't even thinking about USF. But no, like, he's right. There is a little something unique to everywhere. And I think he's also very right. If you have to play at Cincinnati in November, you don't want a snowstorm. If you're from New Orleans, if you're playing UCF in September, you don't want 100 degrees and humid, though New Orleans is a little bit better equipped to handle that type of environment just because they deal with it too. But, you know, so it makes some sense. It is political, though.
It's very, I mean, and he's like that, you know, he is a straightforward, straight shooter guy. And it's funny that it is. And it's funny that he mentioned weather, given how they were displaced because of the hurricane last season. I mean, weather is a huge issue for them. So it's funny that he touched on that. But yeah, you can see that it was difficult to draw, you know, to get him to single things out. So I really had to dig deep in my journalist arsenal for the next question and I got it. I got him to single somebody out, but I asked him, you know, coach, who is somebody that you like to face off against in this league? There's a lot you and I talked about this. There's new coaches, young guys. Mm-hmm. So in him being one of the older guys, I was like, who are you looking forward to facing off against? Who's someone you like to meet across the gridiron? And he actually named somebody. And here it is.
We've got a really good group of coaches. They're, you know, I don't know very many of them well, but they really seem to be nice people and run good programs. And, probably Philip Montgomery, maybe. We both kind of came up Division II and, you know, it's a little bit different way, you know, JUCO and with me. But I know Philip a little bit, you know. But I don't know some of the other coaches quite as well. But from what I do know about them, we go to meetings, pregame. They all seem like a really good group of guys.
You know, it makes sense to me why you would say Philip Montgomery, because they have been around about the same length of time. I don't know if it's exactly the same off the top of my head, but it's right about the same length of time, 5-6 years each. So that makes sense. They've been together and they've been in the West Division back when the conference had divisions too. So they've got a lot of familiarity there. I'd hazard a guess they're in the same recruiting ground a lot of times going into Texas too. So there is that ability to say, hey, we know each other pretty well. And as long as, you know, you don't hate the other guy for some reason, why not build a friendship, right? In the competition, I guess.
I was a little surprised. I didn't know who he was going to say. So I thought, with him, you don't know. So I just really didn't know. So I was surprised when he pulled out, you know, Coach Montgomery's name, but, you know, I was able to then, I spoke with Tulsa head coach Philip Montgomery the next couple of days. And I was able to flip that question and ask Coach Montgomery the same thing about who he's looking forward to facing off against. And he also said Fritz in his answer without me having prefaced it. And I told him later in the interview, hey, you know, Coach Fritz said the same thing about you. And he was like, that's funny. But what he mentioned, and we're going to play the clip for you here in a second, but what he mentioned is that their coaching paths are very similar in that they both started in high school, small ball coaching and worked their way up through small programs. So that's why he identifies with Coach Fritz and they really get along when they see each other. But he wasn't the only coach that Montgomery named. He had another coach that he looks forward to meeting across the gridiron.
Ken and I have been in this league longer than anybody.
Yes.
And so Ken and I, we have a good relationship.
Okay.
We're always very competitive with each other, but that's always a tough game and enjoy that part of it from that standpoint, because we're friends, but I hate Clam. We're just, you know, it's just, it's always a very, very tough matchup for us. You know, Willie and I have become good friends, and I think Willie does an outstanding job at Tulane. I mean, their teams are always very well coached. They got great kids. They play extremely hard schematically. They do some things to always try to test you, and so I always enjoy getting an opportunity to to go kind of head to head with Willie, just because of the respect that I have with him.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Niumatalolo, I don't see how you could not like him.
You just had to say it. Did you notice that Montgomery didn't say his last name? He calls him Coach Ken. He calls him Ken.
I bet a lot of people in the world call him. Well, first off, if you're both like 50-year-old men, I'm not calling you Coach. Mm-hmm. We're both coaches and we're both in our 50s or however old they are.
That's fair.
I'm just going to say it. You're just a buddy to me at that point, or maybe a friend of me.
You're an equal, so I get it. I get it.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm going
to. Are you surprised that he named Coach Ken?
No, because it's kind of the same thing with Fritz naming Montgomery. They've been in the league. I mean, Navy joined the league later than anyone else, but Ken's been their coach the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were a West team too, which means there's that same familiarity. Now, they're not recruiting the same kids, obviously, because Navy's Navy and all that comes with that. But like, again, there's a lot of familiarity that they wouldn't have with, say, Luke Fickell, who I think would be the other oldest tenured coach in the conference at this point.
Yeah, nobody has been saying him. Everybody in the interviews that I've done have been saying that they look forward to playing at Cincinnati because it's like awesome. This fun and it's a great environment. But they do not say that he's someone they look forward to seeing across the field. So I thought that was interesting. Well,
again, I think because you're talking, at least in this past, like with Fritz and Montgomery, you're talking to guys who before the divisions kind of went away, were in the West together, whereas Pickle was out in the East. So I think there's just less familiarity there. I had to take a guess. That's a complete chandelier. Maybe Fickell sucks to coach against because he's cold when you go to shake his hand or something. I don't know.
He probably has cold, clammy hands. I bet.
I bet they're calloused, just like really like sandpapery.
Ew. I like that he talked about facing off against Fritz because there's a respect, right? But then when he talked about Coach Ken, he's like, I hate playing them because it's always a tough matchup. And it's like, anytime you talk to anyone about Navy, no one wants to play them. And I actually asked their fullback coach, Jason McDonald, about that because the fullbacks are a big part of that triple option and why they're so hard to play. And I was like, do you relish in the fact that you make this so hard for other people? And he was like, yeah, we do. We love it. We love it here. So I thought that was cool.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to take pride in what you're doing. If you're running the triple like that, you can't just, you can't do that with like, kind of like I don't know. Like, is this the right thing to be doing? Do you have to be like, hell yeah, they hate to play us. And you know what? We're going to make it worse for them than they expect this year. You know, if that's not your attitude, then you're going to get blown. Your door is blown off, you know?
Yeah.
If you're a fullback who doesn't hit the hole hard, whether they've got the ball or not, like, then you're going to get laid out by a linebacker every time.
He had such a good, hold on real quick. Let me go on this. He called it seek and destroy mentality. And I literally died in the interview. I was like, that's
fair.
That's incredible. That's like the best way I've heard to describe a fullback like ever.
That was for your Sideline Sass podcast, right?
No. So it's funny. Okay. I just did release a podcast side note about fullbacks. I had Johnny Stanton from the Cleveland Browns and I had Mike Burton from the Chiefs on to talk about fullbacks and everything. But I jumped in the Navy Zoom because they were doing full. I've never been on a fullback like college Zoom where there's like the coach and the players. And I wore my Make Fullbacks Great Again shirt and their SID, Scott Strassmore, who's incredible, wrote in the chat, like, great shirt. And then Jason McDonald followed me after on Twitter and wrote me a message and was like, that was such a great shirt. Like, thanks for your question. So it was just awesome to be able to speak with someone who coaches the position in college.
Yeah. And they have that same kind of passion for it. Because
exactly.
You have a passion for the fullback spot. That's just like unmatched.
It's unbridled. It's like, there's
very few people who bring passion into like that one position, like any position. Like, you'll talk about like guys who are like, I'm a cornerback whisperer. Like, all I do is D backs and like breakdown. No. They don't have the passion for it because they're like, it's almost like a tired thing where it's like, I know everything there is to know about D backs. Here, let me tell you what I know. You know what I mean? It's like, all right.
Fullbacks, people
love me about cover three again. Got it.
People love talking about fullbacks. Anyway, I did not ask Coach Montgomery about fullbacks because Tulsa doesn't really use them. No, so I didn't want to.
The old Bryles Miller air raid system.
Yeah. You know, but that's he could really if he wanted to. He could.
They like what they run doesn't really resemble that old from 10 years ago. thing anyways. So like it is a different system, but he's out of the air raid.
I'm going to go out there this weekend for their spring game and I will ask him to his face if he's going to have a fullback after I look at the roster some more. But I did talk to him about environments, just like I talked to Fritz, and Coach Montgomery had a little more of a, he had a better answer because he mentioned some more places and there are some places that, you know, won't surprise you, but there was one that he talked about at the end, which is like, I guess he calls it kind of a rivalry. I was very surprised because I did not know Tulsa and this team had that rivalry, but here's what he had to say about which environments were the fiercest in the AAC.
Well, I feel like I've been to Cincinnati every year, but we finally get to play them at home, which will be nice. Navy is always a tough place to play, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, all the cadets are out. It's always a great environment there, and you know what the game's going to feel like.
Yeah.
Memphis always has a tough crowd.
Okay.
But as you get into it, Houston – their environment, depending upon, you know, and they've been good the last several years. So when they're playing well, their crowd is usually into it, and it is always a difficult place to play. But I think our guys always enjoy that opportunity to go there.
Did he surprise you with that, Dan?
I mean, no, I don't think he did. Okay. Because, I mean, we've talked about all these places he brings up before to some extent or another. Cincinnati is obvious. Nippert's, especially at night, incredibly difficult to play. You had to go up there for that AAC championship game in 2020 when it was like freezing rain and out and just miserably cold. There's no doubt in my mind that sticks with him. We've both talked about how unique a place Navy is and how like that can be its own challenge in its own right. He brought up the cadets. I think he's completely dead on. Liberty Bowl, often overlooked, really tough to play. And then, yeah, he drives home Houston as, I think my favorite part's when he says, depending on how good they've been.
Because I know
that's a little shot right there.
If you heard our conversation, he didn't mean it as a shot. He was just like when they're good, you know, the crowd is really good, like a lot of places, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't think he meant it as a shot.
Well, that, what he's saying, Houston fans, is you don't show up for your 6 and 6 years.
Do Tulsa fans show up for their 6 and years? 6 and 6 years.
Tulsa is a tough place to play. Like, not to get us too derailed, it's got like the smallest enrollment in the FBS, I want to say. It might be Wake Forest. That's the smallest. I know Tulsa's the smallest in the conference. And that makes it harder to field a good team because you need to, you know, have that huge portion of your student body be the football team. And it's hard to get a lot of fans in when you're in a state that has, you know, Oklahoma and Oklahoma so State that like take up so much of the kind of mindset in the state. So you have to like really
didn't you want me to ask him about enrollment? You were like, ask him about...
I said that's a good question to ask him.
I did not in fact ask him about enrollment.
Sorry. I thought it was a thoughtful question.
It is. I'm just not sure, like, and I don't know him well enough now that I've interviewed him and like I know what he responds to.
Open
I could feel it out. And, like we had a long conversation at the end of the interview about his time at Tarleton State. Because I'm just such a historical college football nerd. So I did like a deep dive and asked him about his time. He was part of the best team in Tarleton football history. And I asked him about his head coach, Hal, because I've heard stories and anyways. And so he kind of lit up when we talked about that and like that journey coaching at smaller ball than where he is now. And he had some really good quotes. So I'll definitely have to include those, incorporate them in our podcast at some point. Cause he talked about like how he was used to, he had a really great quote where he talked about when he first got to Tulsa, he's the head coach of this big program and he went to go out to practice and he went to go collect his stuff, you know, to go out. And the like GAs were all like, and the equipment people are like, no coach, like everything's out there already. Like it's all set up, all your stuff's out there. And he was kind of like, oh, you know, because he's used to having to take the cones out and like set them up and, you know.
Yeah, he's used to be like, it almost feels like a little bit of a high school football coach thing where, hey, you know, the cones are over there. When you want to set up a three cone drill, you go set up a three cone drill.
Yes, like you have to line the field and you have to clean up the trash. And like, so he talked about that transition and that being one of the hard things that he had to go through is like letting go of that stuff and also letting go of being in part of the rooms. Because, you know, when you're a high school or a small ball coach, you're in the rooms with the guys all the time, you know, not just out recruiting them. And then you don't see them for a lot of practices or things, you know, because the head coach, people don't realize head coaches are not in all of those rooms all the time. They have to delegate their stuff to their position coaches.
And that's, there's a lot of talk nowadays about like the CEO model of coach. You know, you get like a Nick Saban's a CEO of Alabama. That's why it runs so efficiently. Yeah. He's able to keep putting good people in the position to succeed, and they just have to live up to their potential, which he is good at pushing them to. That's what Brian Kelly is, and that's why LSU hired him away, was they wanted a CEO model, a respectable model, instead of that Ed Orgeron in your face kind of thing. So yeah, it's the same kind of deal where he had to kind of be like, okay, I guess my model,
you have to let go.
I have to change my model and change who I am as a coach, which is why some guys don't make that transition to higher levels well, why they have to go back down, because it's just, some guys belong at a certain level, and that's not an insult to them. It's just a different world.
And he said that he talked about, there's a lot of great high school coaches out there, and some of them don't make it to the bigger, and they don't, or they don't want to. And, but it doesn't change. He talked about the time at Tarleton State as being the best of his life because it was about football. It, you know what I mean? Like, it really was, guys that were there loved the game of football. Cause you're not at Tarleton State if you don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, you're not there trying to go pro.
Right. And some guys did because they transferred out and they used it as a stepping stone, but it was a very good conversation. So you could tell he lights up, you know, when you talk about certain things. And one of the things that he lit up that I talked to him about was how Tulsa has become this AAC disruptor, right? And so I asked him, I said, what do you feel about this role as that kind of disruptive team in the conference? And here's what he had to say about it.
Well, I think, you know, we're one of those teams that's always difficult to play. I think our guys do a really good job of preparing for games. I think we play very physical. We're gonna play for a full 60 minutes, no matter what's going on with the scoreboard. And so I think we have kind of put ourselves as one of those teams that's always going to be a big battle. I can say that though for every team in our league. You know, I think our league is tough top to bottom. I think the strength of our league is our numbers, and every week's a battle. Every week you've got to be prepared. We've got great players in this league. We've got really good coaches in this league, and so you've got to bring your end game every week.
So you know how we talked about how there's like this $35 million to leave the conference, like 1 year early thing going on right now. And is it going to be that much? I would pay $35 million just to have UCF never play Tulsa again. Cause they always ruin UCF season.
See, that's what I was talking about.
Like, I'm so happy that Tulsa's not on UCF schedule this year, just as a pure fan of UCF, because I know they would have lost that game, whether they should have or not. They just do, just how it goes.
Yeah.
So you gotta dodge them. You know, they are incredibly tough to play. And I think it's their attitude. They're not scared of you. They might not be as physically talented or as, you know, athletic as you are, but they're not scared of you ever when they go in. And they're usually very strong on the line. So yeah, they are a tough team to play.
They are. And I like that he touched on, you know, their resilience, their physicality, the fact that they can play 60 minutes, which I think is what it comes down to in college football, is who can put together the complete game. I mean, and I know that sounds so trite and simplistic, but it's true. The things are cliche for a reason, is because they're freaking true. Okay. Yeah.
It's like football's not really a game of inches. Then you see a guy, you know,
like miss fumble a touchdown on, by an inch. Yeah.
And fumble you're like, on the goal line because he extended and he was an inch short, but the ball popped out or whatever. He's that, you know, like, it actually is sometimes though.
And then they're also one of those teams, something that he didn't really say, but was in between the lines, is that they're a mentally tough team. So they could be down or they could be, you know, have big plays made on them, but they don't ever like falter in that regard. Do you know what I mean? Or if they make a big mistake, they come back well.
And I think that's a good sign of coaching and culture, where you don't panic. That's confidence in your ability.
Right.
Not, you know, there are teams that I think, again, not to everything is UCF with it, but like under Josh Heupel, UCF had a bad habit of compounding mistakes. You know what I mean? And that's a cultural problem. If one guy got a personal foul, then all of a sudden you had two more in quick succession. Same with false starts. Same with just bad decision making. Like, it's just sometimes easy to compound mistake after mistake, and all of a sudden you're in a little bit of a hole, or you've let a team come back on you, or what have you. And Tulsa doesn't do that, which means they're in every single game. And I get on them sometimes because they lose to Cal Poly every now and again, you know what I mean? But then in that same vein, they'll take an Oklahoma State team who finished like number five in the country and won the Fiesta Bowl to the brink, you know? So like they are very capable of beating anyone, you know?
They are
a really good team. I think
they are. I'm excited. I'm going to head out there this weekend. First time to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to catch their spring game, which I've been informed by their SID is more of a practice, and it's at 11 a.m., which is going to be tough because I'm going to SMU's spring game Friday night at 7 o'clock. So I will be bringing you guys the sights.
I was just going to say, are you driving or flying from Dallas to Tulsa?
I am flying, for Christ's sake, Dan. Okay. I could drive because it's only a 4-hour drive, which I was informed by people out in Tulsa, but I am going to maximize my time and just fly in Friday to Dallas, catch the game, catch up with Coach Rob Likens, who I have now, this will be the fourth school I've covered him at. Love him. Coach Justice, who's the O-line coach who came from Miami. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see some familiar faces and kind of, you know, I read Sam Kahn Jr.'s piece about SMU's recruiting room, and I thought it was so incredible, and I'm excited to see this young new culture that's there. So I'm excited to check it out. I have some red boots ready to wear.
Fun
for the game. So
you have a big like D for Dallas
belt. No, but I'm going to be buying some gear because that shit is fire. I don't care what anybody says. I like the rebranding with the D and all that stuff. I think it's
do you like how Sonny Dykes took the thing he was doing at SMU, which was Dallas, the city kind of deal, like put the D on everything. And now he's calling TCU the DFW's Big 12 team. He's putting that on, I think, the jerseys.
I couldn't care less what Sonny Dykes is doing.
I was going to say, he's taking like the exact same marketing strategy over to TCU.
Throw some D's on that. That's another good song. Anyways. So follow along, make sure you guys stay tuned, 'cause I will be there. I'll be writing some things up about my observations. If you have any recommendations for the Tulsa area or the Dallas area, please shoot them my way on Twitter. It's going to be a fun weekend. I'm excited. So absolutely. We hope you enjoy these clips from these coaches. I hope you guys like this stuff, 'cause we're trying to do more of it. So
exactly. Yeah. You've got Holton Ehlers that you're going to be talking to shortly.
Yes. And eventually we're going to have these guys on the podcast with both of us. I'm feeling some things out with teams and coaches and
to be completely honest, I've been not good for time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been transitioning a job. I've been moving. It's been a lot.
It's hard to coordinate an interview with both of us, especially being bi-coastal. So
exactly.
We're doing the best we can to bring you guys the content.
Yeah. It's a lot. Like you said, and you know what? Yeah. It's the off season. So I think we're doing a pretty good job getting everything in. You know, spring practices are rocking right now. Forgot to mention it earlier. Alton McCaskill, the running back from Houston, tore his ACL. Wanted to get that little bit of news in there. Last Friday at practice for Houston. So don't know the exact timetable. Most cases an ACL tears the season. This far out though, if it's a minor tear, hypothetically, he could be back at some point, but there's no time.
It's very sad. We're sending, you can recover now from an ACL injury way quicker than you used to be able to. So
if it's a partial tear, he could be back. Right. If it's a complete tear, he probably won't.
And we're going to try and find that out. I'm hoping to talk to some Houston coaches this week. And so we'll do our best to find out how he's doing. And we're sending our best his way because he is a baller and we would like to see him back on the field.
Yeah, it's big for Houston to try to like compete at the top of the conference, which I think we both think they should.
Yes, they should. And then stay tuned. You know, I'm going to finish. I know Dan has some things you want to say, but we're going to have some more coaches interviews. In the next one, I spoke with ECU head coach Mike Houston, one of my absolute favorite. He's incredible. And he sounds just like the actor who plays the coach in Friday Night Lights. And I actually had a whole email exchange with their SID about it. 'Cause I was like, if you guys watch Super Pumped, the story about Uber, that's now on, I think it's on Showtime. It's a whole new series about Uber and Joseph Gordon-Levitt or whatever his name is.
Levitt.
Yeah. Yes, he plays the main guy for Uber. And you should check it out. It's a good show. But his investor, one of his VCs, is the head coach from Friday Night Lights, the show. And I'm telling you that Coach Houston sounds exactly like him. I felt like I was talking to him. So I actually tweeted that and the SID was like, oh, I need to check this out. No one's ever said that. So we'll have some tidbits from Coach Houston. Maybe I'll play some things from, you know, Coach Jason McDonald from Navy, the fullback coach. And I spoke with Dan's favorite USF head coach, Jeff Scott, about the culture and the change out there for the Bulls. Well, so we'll have his quotes on next time as well.
The great thing about Jeff Scott's culture is not letting anyone see the spring game, because there's valuable information there that could be stolen. You don't
First
want
of all,
them.
People do that all the time. David Shaw doesn't let anyone watch his practices for the same reason.
Yeah,
so
but it's, I think no matter what coach is, it's no, I think every coach who does it's weird. And I'm not saying it's not uncommon. I'm saying I think it's paranoid.
I mean, probably, but it's also like, okay. I get it.
But like, is anyone like, oh, we got to steal that USF spring game footage to beat them this year? They've won three games, one of which was against an FBS team.
You know what? If you're a USF fan, go to the game in person. Okay. That's really the only thing that matters. If you watch spring games on TV, I don't have any, I can't help you. So.
Hey, I'm telling you.
You go for the fresh cut grass. You go for the food. You go for the sounds of the pads. You don't watch it on TV. Okay.
Big to differ.
Wow. Okay. Well,
gotta watch the blue and gold Notre Dame spring game somehow. See my boy Tyler Buchner.
Oh my God. I just
come on. He's a Cali kid. You gotta love
like,
him.
Who hurt you?
I'm fine. I'm good. I'm good.
I am great, guys. I'm doing fantastic.
Believe it or not.
I'm also gonna head out to Memphis to their spring game in 2 weeks. So I'm very excited to finally make it to Liberty Bowl.
I was going to say, don't just say Liberty, then people are going to
think say Liberty. The Liberty Bowl, whatever. I'm excited to get out there. My boy Tim Cramsey's the OC there now, so I'm excited to see him. And
I'd be mostly excited for the barbecue, but that's just...
Well, I'm going to do that too, but I'm also excited for Seth Hennigan. We need to get him on the pod.
I'm hearing that that's a real quarterback battle with Grant Cannell this year.
Interesting. We had that same conversation this time last year,
Gunnell got hurt. Gunnell got hurt.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And then Hennigan won the job. But I'm hearing that that's real competition. I know that UCF John Rhys Plumlee versus Mikey Keene's the real competition.
I'm going to be upset if he beats out Seth Hennigan. But Seth Hennigan, with the tweet of the week, anyone willing to do an NIL deal to give back to my offensive lineman, please feel free to reach out. Look at what a guy.
Yeah.
You're telling me that he's not campaigning for the starting job with his offensive, like, what is
going back to the barbecue thing? You're telling me there's not a single barbecue place in Memphis that couldn't use some offensive lineman representation.
I'm sure he's going to, I mean, I don't know. I retweeted it to help him out, but I'm sure there's going to be some people that respond, to respond to that. And I'm sure they'll be,
and they should.
I'll follow up on that when I go out there and see.
Like I said, if there's not some place slinging ribs and brisket that can't use an offensive lineman to say these are the ribs and brisket for you, then I can't help. That's what NIL was made for. I don't really have any, I have nothing else to say then. But yeah, you know, I had one complaint about the way we talked about Cinderella's in college basketball versus college football. I don't know if we have time for it.
Oh boy.
It's a long complaint. Okay.
Well, it's long.
Okay. Well, I could talk about it for a while. I can
hit us with the cliff notes, man.
Okay.
Well, I gotta go.
All right. I'll be quick about this.
All right.
I just want to say, we talk about Cinderella's in college basketball, like they're this thing to be lived up to. And like, thank God St. Peter's beat Kentucky, because we wanted to see that bit of joy. And like, how amazing is it that a team that never has a chance to do this, and we would automatically assume couldn't do this, did it. Then we turn around and in college football, we're like, we don't even want to see them have the opportunity because we know the end result. Well, you know, 19 out of 20 times, the end result of a 15-2 or a 16-1 is a blowout. But we don't complain about it. We don't go, oh, those games are going to get poor ratings because they're going to be blowouts.
Right.
You know, it's just, I don't know why the attitude when we reverse it to college football is, oh, you need to only have the best teams playing because don't you want to watch the best teams at the end of the year? Well, if they're the best teams, then they'll beat, you know, the lower ranked seed. If Kentucky was better than St. Peter's, then they would have beat them in March. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know that, yes, they've got more talent on their roster. They've got the, you know, higher paid coach and all that, and they've got the tradition. But if all that counted for, then they would have won. And if, you know, then the next team would have beat them. Sometimes it's special to watch a special run. College football is the only sport where we don't like it when a team that's a little bit off the beaten path goes and wins it all. In 2007, no one outside of Patriots fans was upset when the Patriots lost the Super Bowl to a Giants team that didn't deserve to make the playoffs. It was celebrated that the Giants went on this magical run, and no one questioned the model. You know, and you've got like Kirk Herbstreit, who tweeted out and I'm going to, I wrote this down because I want.
Oh boy. You wrote it down.
Yeah. I wrote it down.
Okay,
man. Love how much the at Peacocks men's basketball loves to compete and play for one another. Incredibly well-coached and selfless basketball team. Love watching their culture be rewarded on this grand stage. Congrats. And can't wait to watch you all in the Sweet 16. Now, this is the same Kirk Herbstreit who spent years talking about how no G5 team ever deserves to make the playoff. And then when Cincinnati finally did, he said, after, this is another tweet from Kirk Herbstreit, by the way, after Cincinnati made the playoffs, after 7 years of bitching and complaining from a vocal minority of college football, that the college football playoff system is rigged and that the small guy will never get a chance. That was in all caps, by the way. I haven't heard much from them the last couple of days. Everything okay? What's your next conspiracy theory? Can't wait, because that one is history. First off, if Oklahoma State could have punched the ball in from the 1 yard line, Cincinnati wouldn't have made the playoff. They had no choice because everyone else had two losses at that point. Second off, why is the attitude so much different there? It's not celebrating Cincinnati. It's complaining that the people said, hey, this is an unfair system where you're limiting who has access. Every conference in college basketball has access. It's a good thing. I think college football needs to expand, and I don't understand the attitude difference. And that's, I guess, for now, rant over, because we're doing Cliff Notes.
I think a lot of people felt the same way, and we saw a lot of discussions about that on social media. I just would say that it doesn't matter. I mean, I understand your pain and I feel it and I'm sorry, but.
Well, I think irrelevant. It does matter because
they don't care. They don't care.
But expand the college football playoff and stop being such a stooge for ESPN Kirk. Because he is a stooge for his boss at the end of the day.
I mean, yeah.
I know, paid
a lot of money. So.
I know we're all stooges for our boss because right. I get it. We all are
yeah.
If my boss tells me to edit a thing a certain way, so it reads a different way, I'm probably going to do it, but
yeah,
it's not the point. My point is it sucks that that's, you're celebrating one underdog and then basically saying that once you get a little scrap underdog and you never should get another.
Yeah.
And I just don't get the attitude change. Other than it's convenient. I know. It sucks. All right.
It does.
I got to let you go.
Yeah. We had a time crunch on this one and we actually did pretty well. I'm only a little bit over. So.
I was going to say, I was trying not to go too far over.
No, you did good. I'm sorry I don't have a better rebuttal for you.
It's fine. I just wanted to rant a little.
Yeah. Okay.
And like I said, I could probably rant it for another 10 minutes, but Cliff Notes.
Well, we'll be back after next weekend and maybe we'll try and do one I think we should do one every week this month because there's so much going on.
Yeah, we can definitely try to.
I mean, yeah, after the spring games this weekend, then I'm heading to Birmingham, Alabama for the inaugural USFL games. Mm-hmm. So excited. I'm going to catch up with Daryl Johnston there, who's the VP of all that stuff, and I'm awesome. Very excited. I've never been to Birmingham and I'm excited to be at the beginning of something like this. You know, I think it's so cool.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. We've got the NFL draft coming up. I mentioned earlier there will be the super podcast with the CUSA guys.
Stay tuned for that.
Yeah, we got a lot going on in the month of April. And then not too long from now, we need to start our preseason reviews for each team.
Oh God.
I know.
That's why I'm trying to get out to these spring games so I can get I don't feel comfortable talking and reviewing about things that I haven't really seen. So I'm
a lot of research. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to put in some time on the ground, at least at a few schools. So
after spring, you can also expect another rash of transfers. Just as a heads up to everyone. If you thought your roster was set, no, it isn't.
Psych.
Because guys who realize they're buried on the depth chart are going to be moving.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. Well, stay tuned because we will be back with more of that.
Yep. And in the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at Dan_Morrison96. I know what this is on Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Emilnem, E-M-I-L-N-E-M.
All right. We're off.
We'll see you next time.